This is the Quality News Network. President Bush has nominated New York retired federal judge Michael Mukasey to replace Alberto Gonzalez as attorney general. The 66-year-old Republican must first be approved by the Senate. Prominent Shiite cleric Murtada al-Sadr says his movement will resign from the Shiite bloc in Baghdad's parliament and is the government's latest obstacle in creating a unity government. Iraqi officials have revoked the license of one of the largest U.S. security contractors, Blackwater. That after Blackwater gunmen opened fire Sunday in a Sunni neighborhood, killing 8 civilians and wounding another 13. North Carolina-based Black Hawk employs about 15,000 mercenaries in Iraq. Congress has allocated $40 billion to private contractors since 2003. French Foreign Minister Bernard Kouchner warns the world should prepare itself for a worst-case scenario, war with Iran over its nuclear program. The U.N.'s nuclear watchdog agency meets today in Vienna. Experts are digging through the debris of a Thai passenger jet that crashed yesterday, landing in a rainstorm in Phuket. 90 of the 123 aboard died. Many of them are tourists. In Southern California, thousands of people were forced to evacuate this weekend as new wildfires roared through the area. There have been no deaths reported, but several homes and other structures have been destroyed. In Miami, jury selection begins today in the terrorism trial against 7 U.S. men accused of plotting to blow up the Sears Towers in Chicago. The defense says the men never left the country, had only one gun between them, and were led by 2 FBI informants. O.J. Simpson yesterday was arrested for armed robbery and assault with a deadly weapon. He and several others broke into a Las Vegas hotel room, which contained Simpson memorabilia scheduled for sale. 9 people were injured Saturday when a natural gas explosion leveled a health clinic in Philadelphia, Mississippi. The explosion was felt 15 miles away. Silver is trading right now at $12.76 an ounce. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Tired of all the griping? Got to get away from the propaganda of the left and the right? Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific right here on the Quality News Network for America Back on Track with me, your correspondent, Tony Seaton. We don't wallow in the dialectic between the donkeys and the elephants. America Back on Track rises above the fray, representing the people's right, the people's need to know. America Back on Track from the Quality News Network puts the news in context, delivers scintillating interviews and commentary, all part of a conversation with America. America Back on Track is for information-hungry Americans who know how vital it is to the health of the country that the citizens know the facts. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 AM in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Environmentalists have filed suit against the EPA, claiming the agency has failed to set emission standards for ships traveling into U.S. ports. The Federal Clean Air Act requires pollution spewed from the stacks of ships to be monitored. China has recalled Shanghai-manufactured leukemia drugs following reports of serious side effects experienced by children who received them. Regulators have given permission for pharmaceutical company Eli Lilly to market its drug Evista. The drug treats women with osteoporosis who are also at risk for breast cancer. Federal authorities are pasting warnings on the drugs, though, listing side effects of death by stroke. Europe's second most important court today upheld a lower court's ruling accusing Microsoft of antitrust activities in the European market. Microsoft is ordered to pay $613 million and share its communications code with rivals. Representatives from the United Auto Workers and General Motors will continue contract negotiations today after weekend talks were unsuccessful. A strike has been threatened. Light sweet crude is trading at $78.31 a barrel, and gold is trading at $719.60 an ounce. There's more on our website at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
This is a top to, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see...
Yeah.
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board.
Oh.
11,
oh,
11,
and most of
11,
the
and
amps 8. Go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you know, be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to
11. 11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn Conversation Radio into Conservation Radio. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions of Sydney, Australia, and the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters. They're building the American dream every day. B1 Louder by ringing 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. And now, your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox!
All right! Hey, everybody, welcome aboard Foxed Up here for a Monday. It's the beginning of another broadcasting week here on the Head On Radio Network. I am your host, John Fox, coming to you live from Sydney, Australia, and wow, we got kind of a bit of a kind of full show. Well, got a few things to cover, and some interesting stuff over the weekend. Have you heard about Greenspan's comments? I imagine you have. I've seen a few cuts off of Fox News trying to lessen the damage, and then try and spin it, and it's been pretty amazing. And it even made it to the Australian Senate floor today. I was watching Question Time today, and the Green senator from Tasmania brought up Greenspan's comments. And if you'll remember, a couple months ago, I did a story about that the defense minister here, Mr. Howard Nelson, I can't think of his name at the moment, came out and said that Iraq was about oil, and then the rest of the Liberal Party went, "Whoa, what are you doing, man? What are you, nuts?" And they smacked him around a little bit, and he fell back in line. But I couldn't believe it when I got up yesterday morning, and I'm doing the morning surf, and I go to the Sydney Morning Herald, and right at the top it says, "Iraq was about oil, Alan Greenspan." Says former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan in his new book says the U.S. went to war in Iraq motivated largely by oil. This has got to hurt the Bushies, doesn't it? Now, it seems that this book, it comes out to be quite clear that not only does Greenspan not have much time for George W., but he didn't really have a whole lot of time for George the First. Thought, George the First had no concept when it came to an economy. But it continues on. It says, Greenspan said, "I am saddened that it is politically inconvenient to acknowledge that everyone knows, the Iraq war is largely about oil." Now, you and I and most of us, on the left and more on the right are coming to the realization, if not the frustration, that, we were lied into this entire mess. And it says, Greenspan's book also criticizes President George W. Bush for not responsibly handling the nation's spending and racking up big budget deficits. A self-described libertarian Republican, Greenspan takes his own party to task for forsaking conservative principles that favor small government. My biggest frustration remained the president's unwillingness to wield his veto power against out-of-control spending, Greenspan wrote. Bush took office in 2001, and this is the bit that is going to be really hard for him to spin. Bush took office in 2001, the last time the government produced a budget surplus. Every year after that, the government has been in the red. In 2004, the deficit swelled to a record U.S. $413 billion. The Republicans in Congress lost their way, Greenspan wrote. They swapped principle for power. They ended up with neither. They deserve to lose. Oh, it's just like kind of too good. Greenspan's memoir, The Age of Turbulence, Adventures in the World, is scheduled for release Monday. The Associated Press purchased a copy Saturday at a retailer in the Washington area. The book is a recollection of his life and his time as Fed chief. Now, you know my feelings about the Fed. However, you know, in Greenspan's 18 and a half years running the Fed, he was probably one of the better Fed chiefs in, you know, recent memory. In fact, he's been the only one until Bernanke in recent memory, at least for a lot of us. And, you know, it's interesting. There's he also seemed to be fairly fond of President Clinton. Interestingly enough, because Clinton was a curious man. Now, and that doesn't surprise me with Greenspan in a way, because Greenspan was a fairly accomplished musician. What made him go into how he ended up in the Fed, I still am not sure. I'd almost be interested in reading this book, tell me if I'm wrong, chat room, but did he not go to Juilliard? If I'm not mistaken? I for some reason that rings in my head, that he went to Juilliard or one of the big musical colleges for some reason. Why that rings in my head, I don't know, but I know he's a musician. He goes on, it says, Greenspan, 81, ran the Fed for 18 and a half years and was the second longest serving chief. He served under four presidents, starting with his initial nomination by former President Ronald Reagan. He said he began to write the book on February 1st, 2006, the day his successor, Ben Bernanke, took over. The ex-Fed chief writes that he laments the loss of fiscal discipline. Deficits don't matter, to my chagrin, became part of the Republicans' rhetoric. See, it's amazing. See the Republicans will even cherry-pick from one of their own. And I know he's a groupie for Ayn Rand. I know all that. I know he's a libertarian and all that kind of stuff. But it's interesting how you get the impression that the... Thank you very much, Bob. Studied clarinet at Juilliard from 1943 to 1944. And getting into Juilliard, this is just the musician in me. That's impressive. Flat out, that's impressive. Not necessarily big fan of his otherwise, necessarily. Only because of the organization that he's worked for. But... which I've gone on at length, as you all know. And like Bob says, it shows a well-disciplined mind. And he was disciplined. I mean, this is the one thing that, you know, love him or loathe him, he really was quite disciplined, you know. And the only really extreme thing I remember him doing was after 9/11 was dropping the rate to 1% to stimulate the economy after everything shut down for a couple of weeks. you know, and that was probably the most extreme thing that he ever did. He says, Greenspan long has argued that persistent budget deficits pose a danger to the economy over the long run. At the Fed, he repeatedly urged Congress to put back in place a budget mechanism that requires any new spending increases or tax cuts to be offset by spending reductions or tax increases. Large projected surpluses were the basis for Bush's $1.35 trillion 10-year tax cut approval in the summer of 2001. Budget experts projected the government would run a whopping $5.6 trillion worth of surpluses over the subsequent decade after the cuts. Those surpluses, the basis for Bush's campaign promises of a tax cut, never materialized. So the tax cuts are not being paid for. They never were being paid for. Again, we've been ripped off, and the most well-off get a gift once again. We're going to take our first break here, and we'll come back and do a little bit more of this, and then we've got a really, really fun track of the day. Just something completely stupid and silly to kick off the week. So stick around, folks. You're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. We will be right back after this.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tired of walking on eggshells? Trying to do everything right, hoping that one day you'll be able to marry like everyone else? I'm sick of it too. Frankly, we don't give a damn if sexuality is inherited or acquired. We will no longer participate in an endless audition for the constitutional right of equal protection under the law. Strictly Confidential, 9 p.m. Eastern.
The story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fixed stuff. Did some art projects with the kids.
Cleaned up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up this house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed.
And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything now.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. Nice one, Bob. Whose version is that? I don't necessarily recognize that one. That was cool. But anyway, let's get back to Greenspan. turning on the bushies. let's see. Getting back to this. All right, we left it off where the surplus that Bushy based the tax cuts on never materialized due to bad physical discipline. And it says here, where did I lost my spot? Greenspan, in testimony before Congress in 2001, gave a major boost to Bush's tax cut plan, irking Democrats. At that time, Greenspan argued a tax cut could help the economy deal with sagging growth. The economy slipped into a recession in March 2001. The downturn ended in November of that year. Surpluses quickly turned into deficits after the bursting of the stock market bubble in the 2001 recession cut into government revenues. Government spending increased to pay for the fight against terrorism, and receipts declined because of a string of tax cuts. The Bush White House defended its fiscal policies in light of the Greenspan book. Clearly, those tax cuts proved to be the right medicine for an ailing economy, the White House spokesman Tony Fratto said. The 2001 recession was a mild one. Yeah, ask how mild it was for those who really got hammered. Tax cuts contributed a portion to early deficits, but those tax cuts accelerated growth over time, leading to increased business activity, increased job growth, and increased tax receipts, which today has us at low historic deficit levels and on a path to a surplus, Fratto said. What? Historically low deficit levels? What is he, nuts? As to the spending side, Fratto added, we're not going to apologize for increased spending to protect our national security. Okay, here we go with the bugaboo crap. Ooh. Don't question us. Remember 9/11. I'm really getting sick of that line. It's used way too easy. It's like it's such a knee-jerk reaction for some people. Greenspan said he was surprised by the political grip that Bush exerted over his administration. The Bush administration turned out to be different from the reincarnation of the Ford administration that Greenspan said he had imagined. Now the political operation was far more dominant. Greenspan was chairman of the Council of Economic Advisers under President Ford. Greenspan enjoyed a good relationship with Bush's predecessor, former President Bill Clinton, a fellow information hound. I love that. They were also on the same economic page. During the Clinton administration, budget deficits turned into surpluses. But Greenspan was disappointed and sad when news surfaced that Clinton had an affair with Monica Lewinsky, a White House intern. Oh, here we have to go with the Republican shock, sex. Oh, my God. When Bush's father, George H.W. Bush, was president, Greenspan recalled that he found himself in a public conflict with the White House. Greenspan had suggested inflation risks were still high enough that the Fed would be more inclined to boost interest rates rather than lower them. The president quickly challenged the notion. For Bush's father, the economy was his Achilles heel. And as a result, we ended up with a terrible relationship. The economy went into recession in the summer of 1990 and emerged from it in the spring of 1991. Many supporters of the elder Bush blame Greenspan's tight money policies for the recession that contributed to Bush's loss to Clinton. As far as I remember, what blew it for Bush was one of those rare bits where sound bites worked actually against the right side. Don't I remember it was all that read my lips, no new taxes was just thrown back at him so hard, and just it was on television every 10 minutes from memory. And you know that when it comes to the Republican base, especially this modern Republican base that feels that, you know, only the poor should pay taxes, you know, you promise no new taxes, and then even if the situation deems it to be necessary, that's going to that shoots yourself in the foot as a Republican. Greenspan's memoir includes his early years growing up in New York City neighborhood, blah, 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 blah. Other topics, on other topics, questions whether global powerhouse China can continue its economic success over the long run if it does not incorporate democratic processes. However, he predicts that if Beijing continues to move ahead on free market principles, it would surely propel the world to new levels of prosperity. Predicts the most important economic decision U.S. MPs and courts will confront in the next quarter century will be to clarify rules involving intellectual property, patents, copyright, and trademarks. Proposes lowering barriers to skilled immigrants and improving education to narrow income inequity. Interesting. Here's a libertarian Republican saying that we should lower the barriers to skilled migrants. Interesting. I find that kind of like a fascinating little twist. Wouldn't have really expected that to come from him. In fact, I wouldn't have even thought that immigration would have come into the mix at all. But like Bob said, you know, the fact that he got into Juilliard shows a disciplined mind. So, you know, he might be right-wing libertarian, but he obviously pays attention. Pardon me, I'm hunting a mosquito. You know, he and the fact that he refers to Clinton as a fellow information hound means that he takes information in, and that becomes part of the process. And that's got to be a good thing. You can't get too nutty if you're actually open to new information. At least that's my opinion. But it sounds like it could be a really interesting read, this book. I might keep an eye out for it. And like I said, I was really, really amazed. And I wish I could have grabbed the audio, because this exchange on the Senate floor over this in Australia, where the Green MP accuses the current government of lying us into war. And the response was, well, Alan Greenspan was a great chairman of the Fed. I don't think he knows anything about defense, yada, 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 yada. And it was just this complete just having to distance themselves. It was hysterical. And Bob Brown, the Green senator from Tasmania, just stuck with it. It was brilliant. And, you know, it was fun to watch. Let's get on to today's track of the day. This is purely out of fun, folks, for a Monday to just kind of kickstart everybody. For those of you that have come by the headonradionetwork.com chat room, you'll know that we have an amazing set of emoticons. And one of the things that since ELO, one of our wonderful mods, has taken over kind of control over things over there, she has come up with some of the greatest emoticons, and then some of them are people's pets, and we have a whole lot of cats in our chat room. Chico Machine, and we've got, oh geez, and here I go drawing a blank on the rest of them. We've got tons of them in there. So I figured for all the cat lovers, being that it seems that cats are much more for lefties, not all, but there's this kind of thing, you know, right-wingers like obedient, dribbly dogs, and I'm not talking about your dog, Peter, and lefties tend to like the independent kitties. So without further ado, the presidents of the United States and Kitty. Roll it, Bob.
Scratching at the screen door, Kenny O, scratching at the screen door. Little bag of bones been out all night.
won't you come inside?
Kitty, I'm a foot and I wanna touch it. A kitty, I'm a foot and I wanna touch it. Kitty, I'm a foot and I wanna touch it. A kitty, I'm a foot and I wanna touch it. Kitty, I'm a foot and I wanna touch it. A kitty, I'm a foot and I wanna touch it. A kitty, I'm a foot and I wanna touch it. Kitty, I'm a foot and I want to touch it.
Meow, 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 meow.
So satisfied, a pussy burn and looking so satisfied. I'm lost in his little yellow round eye, lost in his little yellow round eye. Pussy burn and looking so satisfied. A kitty rare up and scratch me through my jeans. Kitty rare up and scratch me through my jeans.
This is Bill O'Brien with a message that pretty much defines Concord University. It's from Emily Dickinson. There is no frigate like a book to take us lands away, nor any courses like a page of prancing poetry. This traverse may the poorest take without oppressive toll. How frugal is the chariot that bears a human soul. Respect for learning, a mission to deliver education that touches souls, consideration to what students can afford, career rewards that pay dividends far beyond the dollars earned. At Concord, we've never crossed that important line between the business of education and education as a business. The first is extremely serious. It changes lives and connects with the moral and the spiritual. We're good at that. The second is no less serious. It raises ethical concerns, however. We avoid that. Concord University, the frugal chariot that bears human souls. Call the Concord Admissions Office, 1-888-384-5249.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. In his big speech, Bush referred to Al-Qaeda 12 times. Never once did he call it Al-Qaeda in Iraq or Al-Qaeda in Mesopotamia, just Al-Qaeda. As if they were one and the same. As if Osama bin Laden and his henchman, Zawahiri, are hanging out in caves in the Iraqi desert somewhere. If there are caves in that desert. Never one to underplay a threat, Bush conjured up the possibility that Al-Qaeda in Iraq would take over that country and then threaten America. But this is an impossibility, even in Iraq, by Bush's own logic. Because he talked about how the Sunnis in Anbar province were sick of the Taliban-like rule and how they pledged they'd never allow Al-Qaeda to return. So if the Sunnis can't stand Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which is made up of fanatical Sunnis, and the Shiites can't stand Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and Al-Qaeda in Iraq only has a few thousand troops, as General Petraeus acknowledged, what threat exactly does Al-Qaeda in Iraq actually pose, either to the Iraqi government or to the U.S.? The fact of the matter is, if the U.S. pulled out of Iraq, the Shiites and the fed-up Sunnis would vanquish Al-Qaeda in Iraq in a hurry. But Bush just can't admit that now, can he? Because his whole game depends on his ability to play the tattered old Al-Qaeda card. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
I can see, but no fortune.
again, I was talking about the Republican debate. So we'll get to the point where we're going to drag a terrorist out to the stage with the Republicans, and they're all going to take turns kicking him in the nuts and see who the audience cheers for the most. That's going to determine who's going to be the Republican candidate. And that's what they are. Kick him in the nuts. How do they do that on South Park? Rochambeau. They're going to Rochambeau the terrorists.
Come on, rub my nipples while I torture this little piggy.
No, that sounds pretty sweet to me.
The Cup of Joe radio show with your host, the working man's thinking man, Joe Vecchio. 11 a.m. to noon weekdays here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
Love that little Dobro slide bit. Welcome back, everybody. Hope you like that absolutely bit of musical silliness there. You got to appreciate a band that looks at what they're playing and says, you know, we're not really using the whole instrument. So, you know, they take a four-string bass and rip two strings off of it and call it a bassitar. And take a six-string electric guitar and rip the three treble strings off and call it a git bass. And from what I understand, the guitar player used to do some work with the guys from Morphine, and that was something that they had come up with. So, you know, creativity.
It's rock, man. You only need a couple strings.
Now, this was interesting, and I wonder if this has made the U.S. press at all. You'll remember probably about a year ago, I had a few tirades about the Australian Wheat Board. Do you remember the Oil for Food program? Now, the Oil for Food program was that thing, you know, before we went in and decimated Iraq. Was that UN program where the Iraqis could sell oil in exchange for food. And here in Australia, we have a huge wheat industry. And we had this thing, what they called a single desk office, which was the Australian Wheat Board. And they would represent all Australian wheat farmers in selling their wares internationally. And one of the key parts of that was actually selling into the Oil for Food program. Now, you'll remember at the time there were sanctions. You couldn't pay money into Saddam's coffers. They couldn't profit off of it, you know, that all that kind of thing. And there were always accusations that the Oil for Food program was being abused, but yet all we heard was that the Iraqis were abusing it. Well, we come to find out that the Australian Wheat Board, via a Jordanian trucking firm, pumped $300 million directly into Saddam's coffers in bribes to get the Australian wheat in. Now, this is all happening as we're talking about going to war with Saddam. And George Bush's little butt buddy Howard is doing all the fear-mongering about all the weapons of mass destruction that weren't there and developing programs. Meanwhile, the once a government board, which interestingly enough, about a year before the whole lead-up to Iraq came, the government decided to privatize the AWB. Do you see where they're, you know, distancing themselves? And there was a huge inquiry over this. We saw photos of AWB executives in Iraq with bags of money taking pictures of themselves with massive amounts of weapons. You know, more of that, you know, macho bullshit. I love me guns, and I'm in Iraq kind of thing. And it was pretty shocking. And to the chagrin of the Howard government, we had the Cole inquiry. Howard had to testify. And Howard would never open up the inquiry to actually really, really look into his government's possible involvement. And it came to be pretty clear that the Howard government was complicit in the entire situation. Now, since then, the Australian Wheat Board has lost their government monopoly on Australian wheat sales. U.S. farmers lost out big time. They lost out huge because the Australians were bribing the Iraqis. Now, I'd have no problem with Australia getting all the business if they were actually doing it above board, but they weren't. So, you know, there's this irony of here we were gearing up for war, talking about how bad this guy was and how he has weapons of mass destruction and he wants to, you know, he's going to end up attacking the Western world and all this crap. And guess what? The Australian Wheat Board is helping buy munitions that'll be used against Australian troops. Now, you tell me if that's not treasonous. Because of $300 million, even Australian dollars at that time, would have bought a whole hell of a lot of bullets. So, in the business day section, interesting, this is in the business section of today's Sydney Morning Herald, and you'll find a link to this on today's show post. Iraqi genocide class action against the AWB. Hundreds of thousands of Iraqis who lost family members under Saddam Hussein's regime could end up joining a class action against disgraced Australian wheat exporter AWB, a lawyer says. Two Iraqi widows last week filed legal action in a New York court against AWB, found by the Cole Inquiry last year to have knowingly paid almost $300 million in kickbacks to Saddam's regime to secure lucrative wheat export contracts. The action by Sadia Mustafa and Kafia Ismail alleges AWB contributed to the plaintiff's injuries and damages by giving substantial assistance to the Saddam regime contrary to the law of nations. Pardon me. Mustafa's husband was abducted by Saddam's regime before being hanged in 1997, while Ismail's husband was abducted in 2002 and died after being tortured, ABC Radio has reported. Both claim AWB is responsible for their husband's deaths because it was a major supplier of illicit funds to Saddam's regime. The claim is that AWB entered into a civil conspiracy to aid and abet a terrorist genocide activity of Saddam Hussein's regime, and that it is a nation that was committing wide-scale genocide and torture, that a state can't function without funds, and AWB was providing those funds that allowed it to continue that activity, one of their U.S. lawyers, John Murray, told ABC Radio. Under U.S. law, if you take steps that aid and abet a conspiracy to commit genocide and torture, you are responsible for those acts, and that's what we intend to prove AWB did. AWB inquiry head Terrence Cole last year found that AWB knowingly paid kickbacks to Saddam. There was no evidence to suggest the wheat exporter knew what the money would be ultimately used for, which really doesn't matter because the money itself is illegal. Full stop, no spin, it's just illegal. It's treasonous. It should be considered treasonous in Australian law. But yet, John Howard would not open up the scope of the inquiry to really investigate it. Just like investigations in the United States into corruption end up being, you know, limited in scope. Like the 9/11 Commission, just as one example. However, it continues on, says, however, Mr. Murray said the Iraqis' lawyers disagreed with that and also said that civil legal action required different standards than the Cole inquiry. Asked if the class action could be extended to others who died under Saddam's regime, Murray said, it could be in hundreds of thousands, if not millions. AWB said it will vigorously defend the class action, one of a number of it is facing since the Cole inquiry findings, and which further includes the France-based bank BNP Paribas, which also paid kickbacks to the regime. So, this is just another fine example of the corruption that seems to be apparent in so many of our Western governments. It's just, it's really shocking. And ELO is telling me in the chat room that there could be something similar happening with Halliburton as well. So, you know, if you can't get the criminal law to get him, maybe we can use civil law to get him. Because these actions sure as hell ain't civil. I mean, this is just madness. And what could prove to be very interesting, and I'm going to kind of switch gears minorly, but it does apply. Our Bush ass-kissing Prime Minister Johnny Howard. Is not in good shape coming up to this election that he is yet to call. The election will probably be called this weekend at the absolute last minute, because as soon as he calls the election, he can't use federal funds to pay for propaganda advertising, which he's doing to the tune of tens of millions of dollars at the moment. Now, over the past couple of weeks, some of the polls that have come out have really, really shaken up John Howard's party. And there's been this whole party leadership debate going back and forth. And in Howard's own seat of Bennelong, he is being challenged by a former journalist from the ABC, and she is looking like she might trounce him. So you could very possibly have the sitting prime minister lose his seat in the election, not only lose the election. Now, when these poll numbers came up, and then you have this whole leadership discussion, his just absolute turd of a second-in-command, Peter Costello, who's got to be one of the most unlikable people that I've ever seen. He is snide. He has no concept of what working people go through. Was looking like he might challenge Howard for the leadership. Well, that didn't happen. Well, then Howard said, you know, he might turn the leadership over to Peter Costello sometime in the next term if they retain government. Well, the people in his seat said, you know, some people that were still going to vote for him said, well, if he's not going to fill his full term, I'm not going to vote for him. I mean, he was already losing, right? He's already down. But his own constituents and his supporters were coming out, you know, fairly vocally and saying, look, man, if you're not going to do your full term, we're not going to vote for you. We don't want what they call a by-election to pop up in the middle of the term. It would be just a waste of money and a waste of time and a waste of effort. So then Howard, the very next day, comes out and says, even if we lose the election, I will serve out my full term. Now, you tell me that someone who has been in the top job for 11 years will be happy sitting on the back bench. And here's where it would be interesting. If he actually did this, and if Labor won government, he would be on the back bench and then could be quizzed about all of his nefarious activities, comments, statements, and dealings over the last 11 years. And I think AWB would be one of the crucial ones, on top of lying this country into Iraq, following on with George W. Bush, the whole children overboard scandal, which I've mentioned before, he used it two elections ago, you know, a ship of boat people was sinking in need of assistance off the Australian coast, and Howard says they were throwing children overboard for sympathy to force a rescue. They weren't actually in trouble, when he knew it was factually untrue, but it pulled the scare tactic, and it ended up flipping the election to him. It ended up guaranteeing him getting in. In the last election, it was all about interest rates, how they'll go up under a Labor government. Well, there's now been five interest rate increases in Australia in the past 2 years. Just like in the United States, we are having a foreclosure party down here. People are struggling. In fact, there was a program on the ABC tonight, and I would suggest anyone who's listening, just jot down abc.net.au and look for a program called Four Corners. They did a wonderful piece on the subprime crisis in the States, and explaining how it will affect Australia and the rest of the world. That classic situation of the United States sneezes and the rest of the world gets a cold. And you hear the economists, talking heads, the ones that are actually come from the banks and whatnot on the news programs every day, going, "Oh, it's not going to get us." But then you talk to the independent people, and they're like, "Going, you know what? Everybody, watch out. This could be bad." From what happened in the States so far, we've already had two hedge funds go under in reaction to it here in Australia. One of our major independent lenders got whacked. Macquarie Bank lost some 30% of value in its, you know, credit trading. So this is one of the big problems, and they did a very good job in this of explaining how in the States, you know, you'd have these guys who would basically defraud people, sell them these loans to people who couldn't afford to pay them with, you know, one interest rate for 2 or 3 years, and then suddenly it might double. And their house payment goes up by $1,000 or more a month. Who can handle that? And these lenders, these dodgy, evil son-of-a-bitch lenders will sell the home loan to the customer, to the borrower, and as soon as they've gotten their commission, they sell the liability off to somebody else. And it all just kind of starts getting spread out. So you've made the money from it, but you have no responsibility. And it's this, they always talk about, you know, distributing your risk. Well, it's gotten so distributed that you can't even track who sold what. I mean, they showed some of these foreclosure auctions, and it was just scary. It was absolutely scary just to watch these foreclosed homes just going for fractions of their value. I would definitely suggest checking it out. abc.net.au/4corners, the number 4 and corners, and check it out. It's about an hour. And I'd be interested to see if any of the listeners would check it out and see if it differs from what you're hearing in the States. Does it just jibe right in with it? Do you get any new information? And not only that, most of the funds that have pushed this have come from Europe, Saudi Arabia. So you end up having people that, you know, want their money. And so that it was all, a lot of that investment was what was helping actually keep the American economy fluid. Well, these folks are going to start pulling their funds out because it's not a viable market at all. And they showed some communities where there are so many foreclosures that that you have streets that are half abandoned. So people are coming in and vandalizing the homes, ripping the copper piping out of them so that they can sell the raw copper. I mean, can you tell me how this all works to benefit the citizens of this world? I don't see how it does. And who's going to profit off of this? The same people who've been profiting off of the damage as we go. And they were asked to make a few predictions, you know, like how far through this turmoil do you think that we are? And one of the housing activists said, well, I think we're at the end of the first quarter of a four-quarter game. Because you still have about, I think it was something like, they were showing the amount of loans that are going to go into their more expensive stages by year. And over the next 10 years, we have a huge amount of them coming. So this is only the beginning. And you hear bankers going, oh, everybody, you know, okay, be concerned, but don't panic. Don't panic. Well, you know what? When people start seeing all their neighbors lose their homes one by one, people are going to panic. And they probably have a right to, because they've been screwed. They've been taken advantage of. And it's just absolutely shocking. So anyway, like I said, abc.net.au, Four Corners. Check it out. It's a wonderful program. They do some really good stuff. They also had a really good program last month on peak oil, which you can also download as a vodcast. So, and thank you to the ABC, independent, publicly paid media. It's a wonderful thing. All right, folks, I got to wrap it up real quick. Joe Vecchio coming up next, the working man's thinking man. Thanks to Ben Birch at the White Rose Society for the archives and the streaming. Thanks to Scott Barry at B1 Louder Productions for the music. Thank you to our mods and our bloggers for everything that they do. And thanks to you for being here. And as we say on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you tomorrow.
If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, tell you that sometimes it's easier to desire and pursue the attention and admiration of 100 strangers than it is to accept the love and loyalty of those closest to me. And I would tell you that sometimes I prefer to look at myself through someone else's eyes, eyes that aren't clouded with the tears of knowing what an asshole I can be as yours are. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I might be able to listen in silence to your concerns, rather than hearing everything as an accusation or an indictment against me. And I would tell you that sometimes I use sex to avoid communication. It's the best escape when we're down on our luck. But I can express more emotions than laughter, anger, and let's f***. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush has nominated New York retired federal judge Michael Mukasey to replace Alberto Gonzalez as attorney general. The 66-year-old Republican must first be approved by the Senate. Prominent Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr says his movement will resign from the Shiite bloc in Baghdad's parliament. It is the country's latest obstacle in creating a unity government. Iraqi officials have revoked the license of one of the largest U.S. security contractors, Blackwater. That after Blackwater gunmen opened fire Sunday in a Sunni neighborhood, killing 8 civilians and wounding another 13. North Carolina-based Blackhawk employs about 15,000 mercenaries in Iraq. Congress has allocated $4 billion to private contractors there since 2003. The U.S. ambassador to Iraq is criticizing America's process of admitting Iraqi refugees. Ambassador Ryan Crocker says it could take as long as 2 years to accept the 10,000 refugees recommended for resettlement by the U.N. 50,000 Iraqis flee their country monthly. At least 4 of the 88 passengers who were killed yesterday when a Thai airliner crash-landed in a rainstorm in the resort area of Phuket. Most of them, 130 aboard, were tourists. Typhoon Nari in South Korea has killed at least 7 and canceled hundreds of domestic and international flights. In Miami, jury selection begins today in the terrorism trial against 7 U.S. men accused of plotting to blow up the Sears Towers in Chicago. The defense says the men never left the country, had only one gun between them, and were led by 2 FBI informants. O.J. Simpson yesterday was arrested for armed robbery and assault with a deadly weapon. He and several others broke into Las Vegas hotel room, which contained Simpson memorabilia scheduled for sale. 9 people were injured Saturday when a natural gas explosion